and welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Good morning. How's everybody doing? This is Jessica. This is number 164 of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm so glad to be with you today on this September day. I cannot believe that the summer flew by and we are already back in school. I hope you're enjoying the new routines and getting your life a little more systematic if that's if your kids go to school. And it's just nice to have that. I really enjoy that type of structure. We have a fabulous episode for you today. It is with Erin Odom. Erin blogs at The Humbled Homemaker online, and she gives fabulous financial tips because she has been through the trenches. After experiencing some financial hardships, she and her family restructured the way that they viewed money, saved money, spent money, and she is just a wealth of information. She also has a new book coming out, which we'll talk about. So let's get to it with Erin. All right. I want to welcome Erin Odom to the show. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Jessica. How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Where am I speaking to you from today?
We are in the Charlotte area of North Carolina, just north of Charlotte.
Awesome. I have never visited that area. We went as far south. We lived in Virginia for a time, and we went as far south as Raleigh-Durham, and that's it.
Okay.
But I hear I missed out.
Yes, it's a really nice area, and it's an area that is full of transplants. And that I mean that you don't meet many people actually from here, although I did grow up in this area. Mm. There's a ton of people from up north, out west, and it's just one of those places that is attracting a lot of people from all over.
That's awesome. Neat area. And I love your accent. I hear it. I love it. That's my favorite. Well, Erin, you blog at The Humble Homemaker, and I'm really excited to chat with you more about your story and the message that you're sharing for moms and for women. So will you just give a little background on your family for us?
Definitely. So I've been married for a little bit over 12 years, and my husband and I have four children. We welcomed our first daughter in 2008, and then we had the next one in 2010 and the next one in 2012. So I kind of felt like I was living in a fog for a while,
sure.
Three babies in 4 years. And then we had a 4.5 year break, and we welcomed a baby boy this past February of 2017. And so while we're recording this, he's 4 months old. I think he'll be about 6 or maybe 7 months old by the time that this goes live.
Man.
So we live in the Charlotte area, and we had traveled all over until about the past 8 years, where we settled in what is my hometown.
That's
my husband was a high school Spanish teacher, and he recently finished teaching, and now we work on my blog together as our full-time income, and we also homeschool our kids part-time. We're really involved in our church, and I love encouraging moms.
That is so great. Oh, I just can't wait to dig into each and every one of those things you just talked about. So we'll get to as much of it as we can. But can we just go back? You said your oldest is turning 9 today. Happy birthday. Tell me about early motherhood for you. Was it what you thought it would be? What were some of the best and hardest parts that you remember?
I remember it being better than I ever imagined, but also harder than I ever imagined. I was just thinking this morning, just reminiscing on how I still just remember her tiny little feet and her first smile and her beautiful little hair and just her little sweet baby scent as she was born 9 years ago today. But I was also thinking about to all the different seasons we've experienced so far and how the baby years seemed so long at the time, you know, when I was staying up late at night and, you know, nursing her around the clock, and when she would cry and I didn't know how to soothe her because I was a first-time mom and I had no idea what I was doing, but how those baby years were so fleeting. They went so fast. And then the toddler years, those years were hard, but they were also hilarious. You know, she did so many things that were so funny. And, you know, all three of my girls have made it through the toddler years now. And then the preschool years in particular, that was a really trying time as well. really starting when she was a year old, so toddler and preschool years, our family, my husband and I, we lost jobs. It was right in the middle of the Great Recession. We made a cross-country move, and in that time, we owned a house in a different state than where we were moving, and we couldn't sell that house. Our home ended up going underwater, and my husband accepted a job as a teacher, and he liked his job, but North Carolina doesn't pay, they don't have a very high pay rate for teachers, so we were living on a low income, and it was a very dark season of our lives. So I was dealing with being a new mom, you know, fairly new mom. She was a year old, and this period went on for several years. And I was very overwhelmed. You know, I felt very overwhelmed as a wife, as a mom, as a homemaker. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. And then we were also struggling with barely being able to make ends meet.
That is so hard. And do you look back kind of with a little bit of sadness that there was circumstantial things taking away from you just being able to enjoy your babies? Or is it all just part of the story and you can kind of appreciate it now? Kind of where are you at?
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like it's all just part of the story. I look back and I feel like there were, you know, we did what we could with what we had. And I do feel like I enjoyed my babies. There were times where I felt like, oh my goodness, we're not going to even make it until tomorrow, because my husband got paid once a month. And so at the end of the month, you know, we would run out of food, and, you know, we would have a little bit of food, but it was one of those things where, you know, my daughter would say, can I have two apples? And I would say, no, you just need one, you know, because I knew we needed to make that food stretch. And so it was a really hard time. I feel like our girls were really, what held things together. God used them to kind of hold things together during that time. But I look back and I am thankful, because I feel like if we had not walked through that time, we would not be grateful for how God provided for all of our needs then and now. And I don't feel like God would have really taught us contentment in all seasons if we hadn't walked through that. Now, I will say, now that we have an infant, again, a little boy, I know how fast that time goes. And so I'm really trying to savor the time with him. And it is nice that things aren't quite as stressful. I mean, things are still stressful. It's always, you always still have stresses when you have little kids at home. Sure. But it's a different kind of stress, because we're not struggling financially like we were. And so I'm really trying to savor the baby years with him. And I do look back and think, okay, what would I have done differently? And I would have told myself, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. There is hope. You're going to make it. And, You're going to be okay, and just enjoy your children and just trust God with the future.
Sure. And I mean, there's probably people listening that says, well, yeah, it turned out okay for you. You're not struggling financially. You know, the jobs did come, the money did come. And that's not always true, right? You can't always say it's going to be okay because it's not always going to be like this. There are some circumstances in life, people losing children, people losing their spouse, you know, lots of different circumstances where there are permanent things and permanent circumstances, but that okay can still be okay. It just looks, you have to accept that it might look different than you thought, but the sun will shine tomorrow. You can put one foot in front of the other. So even if it doesn't turn out like you hoped, it will still be okay, right?
I think sometimes looking back, part of our story involves that my dream from the time I was a little girl was to live in Latin America and be a missionary. And my husband and I were actually on our way there when things started falling apart for us. The reason why we had to make a cross-country move was because we were having really bad struggles in our marriage. And my dreams were just shattered. My dreams to have the quote unquote perfect marriage, which now I know nobody does.
Now you know.
Right, now I know. My dreams for, you know, living in Latin America and being able to share God's love with those people, you know, that is a dream that still hasn't been fulfilled, and I'm not sure that it ever will be. But I realized that during the time that we were you know, walking through the valley, that God was putting new dreams in my heart. And that even though I didn't get all of those things that I had dreamed and wished for from the time I was a little girl, that, like you said, the sun will still shine, and you could put one foot in front of the other, and that he can take something that looks so ugly at the time and turn it into something beautiful.
Yeah, that's really encouraging, I'm sure, to people who are in that time of waiting, where it's like, is it going to get better? Are things going to change? They may or may not change, or they may not change how you want, but it's okay. You can keep going. Mm-hmm. I love that. So part of going through a hard time often is accepting service from other people. And you've always been a doer. And I feel very similar. I feel like we're bonded in that oftentimes we're the service renderer versus the recipient. But during that hard time, and you had to reach out to other people more and accept service, what was that like being on the opposite side? And how did you accept that role? And how has that changed now, the way that you render service now?
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, it was not easy at first. Mm-hmm. I realized during this whole journey that I was really prideful about it. I didn't like asking for help. There was one time where our church was having a women's retreat, and when they announced the price, we could not afford it. And they said, okay, but we have scholarships. If you need a scholarship, you just need to come up front and sign this paper and request one. Well, my hopes were dashed. I thought, there is no way I'm going to put my name on that piece of paper where everyone could see it and know that we're struggling. Mm. And I really hid behind that. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I was afraid. And I ended up with that particular retreat emailing the women's director of our church and telling her we were in need. And I was able to go. And I realized that I almost missed out on a wonderful opportunity because of my pride. Because I want it to be the giver and not the receiver of this gift. Mm-hmm. And if I had held on to that pride and hadn't asked for the help, then I would have missed that wonderful time. So one thing that God really taught me during this time was that it's okay to ask for help, and that we learn a lot in just humbling our pride, and that when we don't accept the help that other people have to give, that it's taken away that gift from them. You know, it's a gift for others to give. And so if somebody is called to help you, accept that help. And you know, now one thing my husband and I try to do is we try to give as much as possible. My husband's been really helpful with this. He is a huge giver. He's one of the most generous people I know. I have more of it. He's a spender and I'm a saver. And so I have more of the tendency to just want to hold on to everything. And he says, no, let's give. And being able to see how, you know, God has provided for us in the little and the big. And when we see someone in need, just, you know, really not even asking them, do you need it? Just being sensitive to whether they do have a need, going ahead and, you know, sending them some money, or even if somebody's doing like a fundraiser, like there's a woman in a Facebook group yesterday that said, my teenage daughter is selling some wool dryer balls to raise money so she can go to camp. And I have no idea their financial situation, but I thought, you know, that is really awesome. This girl's working hard because she wants to go to summer camp. Mm-hmm. And it was like $10. So mm-hmm. I said, sure. You know, I would love to buy some wool dryer balls. And I think more of, you know, I just try to be more observant of people's needs. And also, though, I try not to do something that's going to call them out, because I do remember just feeling that shame, you know, of not wanting people to know.
Sure.
So I kind of try to have that balance there.
Yeah, and you can have more empathy for how to extend that service versus just being the hero that comes in and just saves the day, right? And that is an act of pride, too. When you feel like you have it better, or you have more answers, or whatever it is, however we insert ourselves into other people's lives, and we've all done it, right? Mm-hmm. And so humbling yourself to realize, I'm not doing this because I'm better than anybody else. I'm doing this because I can. And when we deny people the opportunity to serve us, we're denying them the blessings that come from being a person of service, right? And so it's a two-way street. We have to, yes, we may be more inclined on one side of the fence than the other, either the giver or the receiver, but it takes two. It takes two. And realizing that it's okay to be on both sides at times is a really beautiful relationship to have with people in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so after living on a tight budget, and so many of us have been there, they say money doesn't buy happiness, but it does provide a sense of stability that, you know, a lot of things do not in this earthly life. How did you do it? How did you figure out, okay, we've lost jobs, we've moved, we've done all these things, and we're strapped. How did you figure out how to solve some of those issues in the beginning, and what did that look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I learned was that if anyone is struggling financially, usually there's one of two issues that may be going on. People can be having a spending problem or an income problem.
Mm.
When we were struggling, so I was raised by two really frugal parents. My dad had a great job. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and they raised us to be frugal. But they also, it was really important to them for us not to focus on like earthly treasures and money. And so my dad had a good job, but he never told us how much money he made. So I will say one downfall of that is that I was a little ignorant of how much money it really takes to live. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we had been married a few years, and my husband and I, we did fine when it was the two of us and we were both working before we had any kids. But then, like you said, we went through this huge trial and we had lost jobs. And my husband got a job as a teacher. And in a nutshell, we did not have enough money to live, but we did not realize that until we were taking a financial planning course from our church.
Hmm.
And one Sunday we were sitting in the class and it was time for the budgeting lesson. And I was really excited about it. I thought, okay, this is awesome. This is the nitty gritty. This is where we learn how to make our money stretch more than we're doing now, because we have to be doing something wrong because we don't have money at the end of the month. And he pulled out the sample budget, and it was based on a family that makes $50,000 a year. Well, at the time, we were making a whole lot less than that, a whole lot less. My husband, it made him mad, to be honest, and I talk about this in my book that's coming out. He left the class, and I sat there, and I was embarrassed, and I knew why he was upset, because he looked at that budget, and he said, there is absolutely no way this budget is going to help us, because it's based on a family that has an income greater than ours. So fast forward to the end of the class, and my husband came back in. He apologized to the teachers for leaving. We told them why. And the teacher and his wife, they said, can we come to your house one Sunday after church and look over your finances with you? We want to help you guys figure out what's going on. And so the next Sunday, they brought us Subway sandwiches. We laid out all of our financial statements on our kitchen table after we ate. He was the first person to ever see all of the inward workings of our budget. You know, he saw our lease on the townhouse we were renting. He saw our mortgage statement. We didn't have any consumer debt. We didn't have, any medical debt, anything like that. But we did have that house, that mortgage, and we had our rent. We put out all the pay stubs for my husband's job. I was also freelancing at the time. I was doing some side work from home. And he looked over everything and he said, okay, one thing is clear. You don't have a spending problem, because we didn't have, consumer debt. He could see we weren't using credit cards and he could see what we were spending. He said, but you do have a pretty bad income problem. You do not have enough money to live. And you would think that would be depressing, but I'm an optimist. And really, it was like somebody lit a fire under me, because now we knew what was wrong.
Right.
We knew the root issue. And once we knew that root issue, we could do something about it. So if any of your listeners right now are really struggling in financial frustration, I would say, look at your bank statements and see, okay, are you overspending? Do you have a lot of debt? And you know what? There's grace for the person with the spending problem.
Mm-hmm.
And there's grace for the person with the income problem. But once you get to the root cause, is it a spending problem or an income problem? Then you can do something about it.
Sure. And sorry to interrupt, but like you said, your husband is the spender, but he even spent in good ways. Like, he was just generous with your money. So it wasn't like he was going and, busting a ton of money at the outlets on the weekend. He was giving charitable, nice things a lot of times, it sounds like, but that's still a spending problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, and that time in our life, we really weren't overspending because we just barely had enough money sure. to cover our needs. Now, mm-hmm. when we first got married, I look back, and there are things that we did the first 3 years we were married before we had children that we really, really regret, where we were spending money, we were spending everything we made. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we were making like double or more than double what we were making when we went through this period of financial frustration. So, yeah, once you figure it out, once we figured that out, it was like, okay, how can we make more money?
Yes.
And then we began, both of us together, trying to figure that out.
I love that. I think that is so smart. And so what are some of the basic tips you could give people that might be financially strapped or just trying to be more responsible over what they've been given?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, if you're really strapped or you're feeling financially frustrated, and this could be somebody who doesn't have enough income, but it also may be someone who, you know, the IRS may say that you are middle or higher income, but you might have a lot of debt. You know, our generation, most people in our generation graduate college with student loans. You mm-hmm, know, we mm-hmm. came into adulthood during the Great Recession. And so I would say a big first step is if you could find a financial planner or financial coach in your area, like we were able to find, who can sit down with you and look at all of your bank statements, look at all of your debt, look at your mortgage, everything, to kind of help you pinpoint your specific issue. And if you go to two of my favorite websites, DaveRamsey.org and Crown Financial, mm-hmm. they can tell you where you can find a free financial planning coach.
Oh.
There are many people that will do this for free. Now, there are some that charge for it, but I would do all you can to find one for free. And if you look online, there are many people that do this just as a charity for other people struggling.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So once you get down to that, and I also give some tips in my book to see if you have a spending problem or an income problem. And you know, some of the things would be if you have a spending problem, you know, you've maxed out your credit cards, but you keep on spending, or you designate things that are really wants, you know, maybe you want nicer clothes or a bigger house or, you know, a big vacation every year, but those, you classify them as needs when they're really wants. And so you're spending on things like that, and that's why you're financially strapped. Or if you have an income problem, maybe it's that you have more month than money. You know, at the end of the month, you're, you know, running out of food and you can't go to the store because your bank account is just a few dollars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you look up the income poverty level income guidelines for the United States, that your family falls into those guidelines. So I would do those things to try to figure out the root cause of your issue. If you have a spending problem, you're going to have to figure out how to spend less money. If you have an income problem, you're going to have to figure out how to create more income. So for my family, for example, we looked into my husband changing careers. He sent out resumes. He went and met with some different corporate professionals to talk about that. He also picked up several different side jobs at his school. He taught after school. He taught summer school. He taught an extra class during his planning period. For me, I started looking at different side jobs. I was already freelancing for our newspaper. I picked up some tutoring jobs. I taught homeschool Spanish. So we were doing all these different things to try to make ends meet. And that did work for a while. But in the end, we needed to try to figure out the one thing that we were doing that was bringing in the most extra income and that had the most potential to really help us exit that season of financial frustration. And it ended up being my blog. So I started blogging as a hobby with, in the back of my head, thinking maybe I could one day turn this into a business
mm-hmm.
and make an income on doing what I love, which is writing and encouraging other moms. And I had hopes for that, but I thought, I don't know if this is a reality. So I really had started it as a hobby, and it was not that long after I started it where our financial planner said, you need more money. So it was then that I began to really work on it more intentionally and hope that it would begin bringing in an income for us. And it ended up that replaced my husband's income, and he continued working for several more years after that. And then several years later, we're both working on it together. But for your listeners, if you need more income, I would tell them, look at things that they are passionate about. Look at their talents. Look at their gifts. Do they like to sew? Could they start sewing and sell things like on an Etsy shop? Are they really good at proofreading skills? There are places online that hire moms to work from home and proofread, you know, or do medical transcriptions. I interviewed different moms for my book that's coming out, More Than Just Making It, and one of them realized that she loved face painting. She loved to paint her children's faces. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was the coolest thing. Her name is Joy, and she started a business called The Joy of Face Painting. Yeah. And now she goes to children's birthday parties, and she brings in extra money for her family by doing what she loves, painting children's faces.
But she turned it
into a business. And so I would, you know, it's easy to despair, but I firmly believe God has gifted all of us and created each of us with unique gifts and talents and has given us specific passions and personalities that we can use to bring in an income for our families. So that's what I would do if you have an income problem. If you have a spending problem, I have different tips in my book, but a big thing is learning the difference between wants and needs, mm-hmm. and basically categorizing all of your spending for a month. Keep track of everything of what you're spending and then put it into categories, you know, entertainment, clothing, you know, housing, whatever it may be, you know, school tuition, gym membership, and then dividing those things out, wants in one pile and needs in another, and looking at which of those wants can you cut out of your life, at least for a season, mm-hmm. while you're struggling financially. It doesn't mean that you can never go to the gym again. But if you're struggling really financially, like that is just one example of something you might be able to cut for a while until you can pay off some debts and really just rein in your spending a little bit. It's going to be hard in the beginning. But I promise when you're able to have some more financial freedom, just the breathing room, you won't regret it.
Absolutely. And I like how you said it's for a season. So really, you can do anything for a season. When you have a newborn and you're up all night long and you're exhausted, it's for a season. It will not always be like this. So remembering that. And when you're eating rice and beans, you know, and cutting way back and not doing the drive-through like you used to, it will be worth it, but it's just for a season. You'll go through the drive-thru again, but just not for right now, right? And so, and getting the whole family on board. So how old were your kids as you were really in the thick of this, and did they get what was going on? And how would you talk to your kids about this, even if it didn't apply directly to your family?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that we were in a good season with our kids, as far as our kids weren't old enough to really know what was going on. Mm-hmm. You know, they were, you know, really we started the season when our oldest was a year old, and then we had two surprise pregnancies. Actually, we ended up having three surprise pregnancies in all, but the last one, you know, was just the last year.
Yeah.
But so during that time, and it was a blessing, but also stressful. My husband and I, when I got pregnant those two times, right, during that season, because we thought, oh my goodness, we can't afford diapers for one kid. How are we going to do it for two? And just a side note, I started using cloth diapers. You know, we figured out ways to make it work. But if you have older children, I would really have an honest conversation with your kids. You know, our kids didn't know what was going on. They had no concept, which I really am thankful for. But, you know, our oldest, you know, she's 9 today. Once in a while, she'll hear me talk about things, especially with my book coming out. She's heard me talk about it. And she said, Mommy, we were poor when I was little, weren't we? And, you know, and I use that word poor. I think that's a very subjective term. My husband and I were fortunate enough during our teen years and 20s to go on various mission trips around the world. And I know when we were living on a low income in the United States, we were still rich compared to most of the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So I do want to be clear in that. But my daughter has picked up on that we struggled when she was little and she had no clue. You know, if you have older kids, I would have honest conversation. I give different tips in my book about how to, you know, curb spending with your grocery budget. And one of the things I say, and it is something so simple, And it's something I grew up with, so I take for granted that not everyone does this. But when we would go out to eat, we would just order water. And that's what we do now, because ordering drinks with your meal really adds up. You know, a lot of times it's like $2 extra per drink, or sometimes even more depending on the restaurant.
Yes.
And if your kids are used to having, you know, soda or juice or whatnot all the time, then you may just need to have an honest conversation with them and say, okay, we're going to order water when we go out to eat, or maybe even just drink water mainly all the time, and say, mommy and daddy are trying to save money. So we're going to do this for a while, and we're only going to save soda for a special treat. Okay, mm-hmm. That's just one small example, mm-hmm. you know, or things if they want to go to camp, or if they want to participate in extracurricular, having an honest conversation. You know, mommy and daddy are working, and we are trying to make our money stretch and be really good stewards of our money. Let's see how you can earn some money to go to camp, and we'll work together to think of ways that you can create the income to do that. Kind of like the little girl I was telling you about that's selling homemade little dryer balls, you know. And so begin teaching your children good frugal living tips, but also wise financial stewardship, even when they might be, you know, older kids, preteens, and teenagers.
Right, because if you're just saying, they're saying, can I have the Happy Meal? And you're saying no, that's mm-hmm. a lot different than, no, it costs a lot of money. So we're going to eat at home. And so giving them that mindset, we can't just assume they know the why behind things. And so taking the time to explain it to them can help really set them up for success as they view life in the future. We're helping to develop their mindset and their framework that they're working with. If we don't take the time to explain those things to them, how will they ever know where money comes from? How will they ever know how much something costs if you always just buy it for them? How will they ever know, you know, go on and on. But I think that is so important to start, even when they're young, to highlight those principles. I think that is huge. And so you've written a book. It's coming out. And actually, the day this airs, September 5th, it's the day. It's Yay! The day. Yay. Tell me about that book. Tell me what it's called. Tell me where we can get it. And why did you write it?
It's called More Than Just Making It. Hope for the Heart of the Financially Frustrated. And you can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. I think Books A Million, any of the major different bookstores, Target.com is also carrying it. And it is part memoir of our family's time walking through that low-income season. And it's part practical how-to of how, regardless of your income level, regardless if you have a spending problem or an income problem, how you can learn to go from feeling like you're just barely surviving to go to more than just making it. So when I was living this season, I always thought in my head, I feel like I'm just barely surviving. Mm. And I didn't really even verbalize it, but I felt like I was just barely surviving, not only financially, but as a mom, as a wife, as a homemaker. And so the whole book, it's different frugal living tips and just financial stewardship tips, but it's framed in that story and really a testimony of how we went from barely surviving to realizing, okay, there is hope. You know, life may not look like what we thought it was going to look like, but it's still going to be okay, and we can make it. We can make it through this trial, and we can learn through it, and hopefully we can help others through it too. So my hope is that by sharing my story with others who are struggling, whatever struggle it may be, that they will realize that there is hope for them too, that even though they may feel like they're in a dark tunnel right now, because I felt like that a lot, that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And like you said, Jessica, and I totally agree with it, life may never look like what you thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be permanent circumstances that will never change. But like you said, the sun will come out there, you know, life goes on, and we can choose to be content and grateful in what we do have. And see how God provides in both the little things and the big as well.
Oh, I love that so much. And I love that it is part memoir, because I think when somebody has walked that walk, not just become an expert because they've read about it or studied about it and they're trained in it. You know, it's kind of like parenting experts. They give parenting advice, but they have no children, right? And you're like, okay, yeah, my kid's nose will always be wiped. Yeah, got it, got it. Or the healthy cook that's not feeding, you know, a picky eater. You know, whatever it is. You've been in the trenches. You've been there. You've lived it. You get the emotions behind it. So I think that's what's going to make this book so effective, is that you can identify with the people that are going to be reading this, needing your help, and you can walk alongside them and be like, I can do this, and so can you. I'm so excited for you, Erin. This is huge. Oh,
thank you. I really hope people are encouraged by it. And as well, if someone's not struggling out there, when I was going through this time, I never imagined that it would come true, that I would really write a book about it. But I remember thinking, if I make it through this, I hope I can write a book that will really change people's minds about those who are struggling in the United States. Because, like I said at the beginning of our conversation, I really had a misconception. I really, I was prideful asking for help. I had to be humbled. And so maybe somebody is out there and right now they're doing okay, but they are longing to have more empathy for other people who are struggling, and they want to know how to help people who are struggling. I think that my book might encourage them as well and give them a different side of, you know, what they may see on the news or somewhere else.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And just because you're not struggling or maybe in that right this second, you never know what's ahead. Right. And exactly. So preparing for anything, any of the unexpected, whether it's needing these financial tips or not, dealing with the mindset shift in being able to deal with what you're dealt, you know, those lessons are definitely universal. Mm. Yeah. Oh, I love it so much. And then you're actually currently writing your second book. Is that right?
I am. I'm a little crazy.
There's no rest for you, Erin.
I know. This is my first experience with traditional publishing, and I think maybe next time I'll only want to write one book a year.
Yeah, maybe slow it down. Yeah.
But it's fun. It is fun, and I really hope that both books will encourage people. The second book is called You Can Stay Home with Your Kids, 100 Tips, Tricks, and Ways to Make It Work on a Budget. Mm. And so it's not as story-driven. I mean, there are some stories in there, but that book is going to be for moms who just want to have a little book that they can just tuck inside their purse, and they have a few minutes in car line, or maybe when their kids are at ball practice, or maybe a mom who's nursing in the middle of the night, just to get little nuggets of how to be a better steward of their finances, you know, how to be more frugal and save more money, and that book will give them that.
I love that. I'm so excited. We may need to have you back for a book club episode for that one. That would be so fun to chat about more of those specifics. How fun.
I would love that, Jessica. Oh, it's so great to have met you.
Oh, I know. This has been such a delightful conversation. And you're somebody I want to talk about money with. You know how there's some money people that either seem like too high and mighty, or they tell you exactly what to do, and sometimes you're not always game for their tips. I feel like you're so approachable and understanding of individual circumstances where you have ideas and you're happy to share them, but it doesn't feel like you're telling me one way to stop spending my money or to save more money or, you know, things. I just think you have a really approachable way, which I think is really going to resonate with people. And I know it does. Obviously, you have a very successful blog.
Oh, well, I want to just tell people, you know, one thing I learned, my husband and I, we thought we had done everything right. You know, our generation was told, you know, go to college, get your degree, and, you know, then you'll get jobs, and then you'll always be secure. But we learned that's not always the case. Mm. And we walked through some really humbling times, and we learned that everyone's situation's unique. And you never know someone's story. You never know what's going on in the background. And so I can tell you our story, and I can give you different tips and hopefully encourage you and give you some tangible things you can do, but you have to always filter it through the lens of what is your story, you know? And so I can't sit in judgment of people who might be struggling financially, because now I've walked through it and I know that we all have different circumstances.
Right. And it may not look like the family that you thought was struggling. Right? There was an episode several months ago with a mom whose son was addicted to drugs. And she's like, we didn't look like that family. Right? So it's like you used to, you know, have a stereotype in your mind of the drug addict. She's like, that was not my son when he started. And it just goes to show that, yeah, you never know when people are walking around, you know, when somebody cuts you off in the parking lot or when someone is kind of grumbling at the checkout, whatever it is, you never know what they're facing. So just extending a little more grace to people because life could be really hard for them. I mean, life's tough for a lot of us, but you never know just that day in particular. Just offering a little more grace to people, I think, is huge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, where can people find you online, Erin?
Well, I'm online at thehumbledhomemaker.com, and it's humbled with a D on the end.
Okay.
Because I have been humbled. That's like the story of my life. And they can also find more information about my book at morethanjustmakingit.com. I'm on Facebook at The Humbled Homemaker. I'm on Instagram at The Humbled Homemaker. I'm also on Pinterest, but I mainly interact on Instagram and Facebook. They can also join my newsletter list at thehumbledhomemaker.com. Right now, I have available a free 5-day e-course called Eating Well on a Budget.
Cool.
And I basically, it's a video-driven course with worksheets, and it's absolutely free. They can just sign up for it on my website, and it'll walk them through some of those frugal living tips that I learned while we were living on a low income and still use to this day to help cut our grocery budget without cutting into our overall health. I would love for them to come visit my site. My mission is just to extend grace to moms in the trenches because I have been there and I am there. You know, like I said, I'm starting over. I've got a four-month-old. We're recording this. And I want moms in the trenches to know they are not alone in this journey. We have to all be there for each other.
Absolutely. And I feel like September is such a great time to kind of reevaluate your systems in your family and how you're meal planning and how you're budgeting and things like that. It's kind of like a new year of sorts as the new school year starts. So I think there's no better time to start than right now. And to get your finances in order, get your meal planning, you know, amped up. I love all these thoughts so much. Erin, you're so delightful. We could chat for days, but I wanted to ask you my final question that I ask all my guests, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I would tell my pre-motherhood self to savor every season. My one word, I don't know if you give yourself a word for each year. It's kind of a popular thing right now. But my word for 2017 is savor. Mm. And like I said, today we're recording this, and my oldest is 9 years old today. And it hit me a few weeks ago. That means her childhood is halfway over. I feel like I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
And it has gone so fast, you know, and when she was a baby, and then when I had really three babies at once, because she was four when my third one was born, every day felt so hard. Every day felt so overwhelming. But that time goes so fast. So I would say when you're sitting there, mama, and it's the middle of the night and you are nursing that baby, and I am with you right now. I was up most of the last night. That savor it. And it doesn't mean that you never feel frustrated, because right. You're going to. And you're going to feel frustrated. You're going to feel overwhelmed. But take a minute to just, like, rub that sweet baby's head, you know, like, caress their little feet, and realize that one day they're going to have big stinky feet and you're not going to be able to do that anymore, you know. But at that point, when they have big stinky feet, they're going to say, hey, mom, let's go on a bike ride together. And you're going to be able to go on a bike ride, and you're going to be able to talk about what's going on in their lives. And it's going to be a different kind of relationship. But I am just really praying that I will be able to savor each season, because I look at my daughter today and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Her childhood is halfway over. And I really want to make it count, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. It's so, so true. Each season is so special for its own reasons. And there's good things ahead. And maybe leaving some good things behind, but there's good things ahead too. Erin, you're so delightful. I'm so glad to know you.
I'm so glad to know you too,
Thanks
Jessica.
For sharing.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure. I'm so excited for everyone to hear this. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
I got so much out of that conversation with Erin, and that was my first time chatting with her, and I'm just so glad to know her now. She has other books called You Can Stay at Home with Your Kids, and I definitely ordered on Amazon her new book from The Humble Homemaker called More Than Just Making It, and I ordered that today. So I hope that you will too if it sounds of interest to you. I think that money and marriage topics can be a little bit taboo and something that people don't really open up about, but I love this isn't just a how-to book. It's a memoir that shows that if she can do it, so can you. And to kind of unveil that and not mask it with, you need to look a certain way to have money problems. I think that's so powerful. So Erin, thank you for sharing your journey. Thanks for writing this book, and I can't wait to read it. If you want to follow me on Instagram, you can do that at JessicaDalquist3 or on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And anything we talked about today, you can find on our website, ExtraordinaryMomsPodcast.com. And in addition to just today's episode, you can find past episodes there as well. So if you are new to the Extraordinary Moms Podcast, I welcome you. I encourage you to subscribe if you're listening through iTunes. That way, anytime a new episode is released, you'll never miss it. We have so many great ones, and I really hope that you'll check those out. You can tune in this Friday for a revisit episode with one of your favorite guests. And then we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode with another Extraordinary Mom. Bye.